Customization, transparency, profit. The HedgeBetter sports betting platform is a revolutionary concept that creates a competitive advantage for every party involved in the sports betting process. We are putting the odds in your hands, cutting out the middleman, and empowering a future generation of sports bettors. Look for the HedgeBetter sports betting platform coming in 2023. In the meantime, visit us at www.hedgebetter.com, follow us on Instagram at HedgeBetter, and subscribe to the HedgeBetter YouTube channel.
Back at it again, episode 79. Welcome to Steel and Naz, presented by HedgeBetter, sponsored by Slide Edge Fitness Performance out of Braintree and the law offices of Patrick J. Foley. Win a damn bet.
struggling. It's tough out there.
Yeah, it's tough out here, you know, one day after another. Big interview tonight with reoccurring guest, Dave Griffin. What an unbelievable job this kid has, you know, gone through the process through Division III baseball up into minor league ball, getting called up to Double A, which is a huge deal, Binghamton Ponies. We had him back on, kind of tell him of what he's kind of gone through and, you know, how exciting that role was. And he got the opportunity to play in front of some friends and family over the weekend in Manchester.
Yeah, that's unreal. I mean, especially like the way that it kind of worked out like that, like to get the call up and then just like bang.
Yeah, for sure.
Home field and get everyone up there.
Just great stuff. Even, you know, me being a baseball guy really puts in to show how much, you know, work goes into it of, you know, being able to get there and not settling for anything less than what you want. I think it's really cool. Afterwards, a big Celtics W in Game 7 over the Milwaukee Bucks on Sunday. We have your recap on that along with a big-time Miami Heat Celtics rematch in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yep.
Big shout-out to Luka Doncic and Karen Jorgensen for your big 40-piece. I'll give you that.
And Sons of losers.
Yeah, and a tough Bruins Game 7 loss to the Carolina Hurricanes, which includes their season. Might conclude our favorite guy here, Patrice Bergeron's career. We'll give you our recap on that with everything else going on in the NHL playoffs. We're going to bring it on as Dave Griffin joins the boys to discuss his career in minor league baseball. Just a warning, was a little bit technical difficulties, but we got the job done. Here we go with Dave Griffin. We're now brought on Hanover native recurring guest, Dave Griffin, now in the New York Mets organization, Binghamton Double A Ponies. Now, I said it before the call here. Just want to give you a big congratulations for getting called the Double A. What was the feeling right out of the chute here of, you know, getting the call? You know, you've been battling Single A, whether it was, you know, Low A, High A. How great was that feeling, at least, you know, getting, you know, more up the totem pole here?
Yeah, it didn't hit me quite first. I had a day game earlier in the day that I pitched at. I wasn't too happy with how things went. And, like, I was actually out on the field still, like, talking to some fans and some friends. And my roommate came up to me and said, hey, he goes, I think you're getting the call up. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, Skip just said you and then two other guys that come to his office. I'm like, oh, okay. So I went to his office. He told me the news and confirmed that I was going to Double A. I was actually in shock for a bit. It didn't quite hit me until, like, I was packing and all that stuff. And, like, when I found out, like, when I'd be throwing, like, my first start in Double A was in Hartford at Dunkin' Donuts Park under the lights on a Saturday night. So that was a really cool.
Thrown right in there. Yeah. Love it.
That's great. You're playing local, too. I saw you play I didn't go, but you were playing the Fisher Cats the other night. I saw you had a bunch of friends and family there. That must have been great.
Yeah, actually, honestly, same stat line, which is what I wasn't too thrilled about. I mean, 3 2/3, 5 hits, like most of them were just soft contact that kind of bled through, and then 3 runs. And in Hartford, I think I had 6 strikeouts. In New Hampshire, I only had 2. So, I mean, that's just kind of how it goes sometimes. But yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a jump from High A to Double A for sure. I mean, now it's like a sink and swim or swim at this point. So it's going to see what you're made of.
Now, even just like your preparation going into the start, do you look more into the scouting reports than you would when you were in Single A? Do you have more resources? And, you know, maybe this 3 hitters coming up where I probably shouldn't throw them a fastball, you know, low and in. I should kind of lean my way towards, I don't know your combinations here, but maybe change up low and away, something like that. Are you kind of mixing up more of, you know, I got to stick more to a game plan than, you know, kind of burning this guy?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still the new guy. Some of these guys have played some of these teams before. So going into it, like, I trust them on their advice. But obviously at the same time, too, like, I might be different than another guy. So, I mean, it's just kind of seeing, like, throughout the game, like, seeing how the hitter does a take, like, seeing, like, where they're stepping, where their hands load, stuff like that. Just kind of trying to watch it throughout the game as well. And even, like, the days leading up to my start, where if it's, like, a if I'm throwing at the end of the series, trying to watch the games during the week, just try to see, like, what does some of the hitters do in certain counts situations and see how they get themselves out. I mean, I know I'm not going to throw fast balls by everybody. I mean, yeah. The guys are too good at this level where it doesn't 100 or 88, they're still going to hit the fastball. So you got to learn how to throw the changeup for a strike, the slider for a strike, how to move it just off the plate, how to make it look like a strike, so on and so forth.
How was the adjustment to, like, the new facilities, the new stadium, stuff like that? How did you, like, get back into your routine?
I mean, the stadiums themselves kind of do, they kind of felt like the Futures League in a little bit, which I'll give a major credit to the Futures League, just like still the same stadium, stuff like that. I think what was different for me was throwing so close to a home crowd where like Connecticut was pretty close and even New Hampshire, there was a lot of people there. Like it honestly felt like when I walked down the mound, there was like a roar, like it was an actual home game in the stadium, which was a very surreal feeling.
That's unreal.
Yeah. That, like, put things into perspective real quick. But no, I mean, at that point when like you have so much outside stuff going on where it's so important to stick to the routine and just kind of go by the timeline, you should like stretch at this time, make sure you throw at this time, get a number of pitches by then, and just trying to make, go kind of go through a checklist mentally of what you got to do to get up to the start.
Is there anything your new team did to like welcome you on? Any like rituals they do for new pitchers or anything like that?
Yeah, most of those guys I played with in Brooklyn last year. And then the coaching staff is a combination from Brooklyn last year and low A Port St. Lucie as well. So I going in, I knew a lot of those guys anyway. But still being the new guy, you still gotta not get initiated, but like at the same time, like it's still a new environment, new culture you got to get settled into.
Any rookie dinners or anything like that?
They did have me sing karaoke on a bus ride. That didn't go over well.
What was the song?
Well, I had to go a cappella, which I'm not going to say what a song it was, but I got booed off the stage, or booed off the bus.
That's tough. I heard it. Isn't if you get booed, you have to sing another song on top of
was
that?
Was it Piano Man?
No, but it was like with the old classic, and then I literally went like deer in headlights and just forgot the rest of the words, and I just got booed so hard at that point.
We've all been there, not on a bus, but we've all been there. Speaking of your new home, Binghamton. So I remember that I went to college with this girl who ended up working on the news station, and you know, it's kind of like, I would say East Bum, New York. Have you found anything fun to do there, you know, on your off days or, you know, maybe singing karaoke at your local pub?
I mean, I literally got here on, was it Monday, 2 weeks ago, and my phone broke. Like, literally the moment I got to, like, the apartments all settled in, like, my phone broke because the news just went public that I was going to AA, so, like, everybody was texting me. My phone was going crazy where literally, like, my phone did not have enough storage for the text, and it just froze and shut down. And then the next day, we were on a bus. It's like, I didn't have a phone all day Tuesday. I had to go to the Apple store for like 2 hours on like a Wednesday to get it fixed. And then like, we didn't get back in from New Hampshire till like 11 o'clock last night. So today was like my first full day at Binghamton. And I mean, I went to the stadium and threw a bullpen and lifted. So I still haven't really explored the area. I mean, I've been to the local Walmart. That's about it to get like groceries and supplies.
Fair enough.
Got to get that done.
I always judge a Walmart based off how many Winnebagos are in the parking lot. So that next time you go, look how many there are there and give me a shout.
What's better, more or less?
More by far. I remember when I went to school up at Plymouth State, the Walmart in there was like at least like 15. I'm like, these people are awesome. There's just like a village in Walmart.
Yeah, they legally allow you to live there.
Yeah, no, exactly.
That's on board.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. My next question was going to be, what's kind of, you know, have you grown fond about the most when it comes to minor league baseball? You know, there's the bus rides. You just talked about, you know, being local now, some games, you know, the fans. You know, it's a whole lot different of, you know, we all grow up. We all go to major league ballparks. We all kind of see how maybe it could be like. What is it like in minor league baseball in terms of, you know, the fun stuff that you know, isn't even really about the game in general, but everything around it?
I think more of just like still being able to play a kid's game. It's nice to be able to wake up and realize like, oh wow, like I'm playing this at a professional level at a high professional level now. Like just still being able to play baseball as is, or just a sport in general, is definitely like humbling. But I mean, still like a long day. I mean, our bus is like at 1 o'clock, gets to the field like 1:30, stretches at 2, and we're there till literally first pitch, like doing something or whatever. And then we just sit for 4 hours and watch a game. Then that game ends, and then it's like eat post game spread. And sometimes we don't get back to the hotel to our rooms till like 11:30. 10:30, 11:30.
So it's a lot more like a business, unlike college, where, yeah, maybe if you play a weekend doubleheader, it can be an all-day event, or even, you know, high school is kind of after school, so it really is like this whole marathon thing of, you know, you come in early, you get your work in, and then you kind of sit and lounge out. They even have things set up for you. There's a whole schedule of, you know, when people are going to take IO, when people are going to throw their bullpens, when people are going to take BP, you know, everything like that. It seems like it's more of a business type based than, you know, your average college or high school game.
Even after with media and stuff like that.
Oh,
like,
yeah. I'm sure you have the amount of technology this for development for just players to develop is absolutely night and day. Like they carrying around equipment that's like a couple grand to like $40,000, like just to help us develop and stuff like that. And it's cool to see, like, yesterday we watched, or some of the guys, we all watched Colin Holderman make his MLB debut for the Mets.
Oh, nice.
And like a lot of those, and like we're on the training room watching it, like he got his first strikeout, we're all excited, because we found out earlier that day that he was getting the call up, so it was pretty cool to see. And then all of a sudden, like, we were just checking the Mets score, and then all of a sudden, like, oh crap, like he's in. So like we all like quickly went to the laptop and like watched it live. So that was a really cool, surreal moment to see, where it's like a lot of the guys are starting to notice, like starting time where, like, guys that you get drafted with or play with, like, majority of them or, like, some of them are starting to make their MLB debut, or, like, they're almost there, which is kind of a crazy thing to put in perspective, especially after being, like, someone that, like, wasn't really around that stuff growing up, for, like, to now, like, see, like, oh, wow, it's so close. It's definitely really cool to see.
Yeah, and I feel like that must be on a weekly basis in most, you know, minor league, at least double-A, triple-A, clubhouses of, you know, you're seeing this guy who you played with a year or two ago. I think that's really cool. And then in your instance, you're kind of coming from, you know, low high A, where you haven't really been there before, and you're starting to kind of taste that and, you know, kind of eating up a little bit. So it's really cool to see, you know, you get to that moment where, you know, this is a real possibility of, you know, getting to that where you want to get to.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's definitely diving annex, but like the littlest things can make the biggest difference. And they really dive into like how you're moving and how much you're moving, how much force you're producing. Like, you're better in this position compared to this. I know this feels more comfortable, but you're more powerful doing this. And it's so crazy how they break down like every little detail. And half the time too is like you're trying to adjust your body to it. And that's when it's like, if you can get used to it, then it can take you wonders. But if you're still struggling to get used to it, then it's like you're going to be there for a while.
And I know it's only been 2 weeks, but can you notice a difference in your, like, pitching style or power, or whether it be control since you started training with the coaches?
Yeah, a little bit. This off season compared to, like, last, I mean, I really started developing a changeup, just, like, getting a good feel for it, which is, like, still trying to build confidence and still getting, like, more consistent with it, especially at the double-A level. Like, it's so – the guys that make the jump from double-A to triple-A or even double-A to the bigs, it's, like, being able to have that – plus change up to go along with a fastball and a slider. It's being able to harness that third pitch and the strike zone consistently, and just the usage of it.
Especially, I think if you're trying to, like, if you're looking to start games, like you need three or four there to get, you know, past lineups two or three times around. You know, you see in the MLB nowadays, not a lot of players in general get through five innings now, because they can't even get through two guys and two times in the lineup. It's crazy to see now that guys don't even go that deep in games anymore.
Like, it's crazy to think about too. This will put in, like, for an example, Jacob DeGrom throws 102, right? Mm-hmm. All you see is his highlights of him just blowing fastballs by everybody. You know, he throws his fastball of 40% of the time. That's it.
Yeah. and then everything else in between.
Just a filthy slider, filthy changeup, and whatever the hell else. Like, that guy's ridiculous.
That was going to be more of my next question. So how did spring training go? And you get an opportunity to see any of those guys and Scherzer. Maybe you were in the minor league camp, or if you had a stint there to see any of those guys with the big club.
Yeah, sometimes when the big league guys weren't traveling and the minor leaguers were having scrimmages, some of the big league guys would come down and take at bats. I was actually either a ball boy or bat boy for like one of the games, and a bunch of big league guys came down, like Cano, Nimmo, McNeil, Escobar, Marte. Like it was really cool to see those back and forth, and just like talk about hitting too. Like they caught on to some guys tipping their stuff just like so quick within like the first couple pitches, and then how they were able to like discover it too and make the adjustments was just a whole nother level of just like intelligence and knowledge that those guys have.
The other day, Max Scherzer didn't let the guy who's taken the first pitch throw it because he was late. What would you have done in that scenario?
Honestly, I'm the same way. I'm kind of ready to like go, unless like, obviously if it's like rain, it's out of my control. Like, I don't want to throw in the rain. Like, nobody does. Yeah. Balls are slippery nowadays. So, but no, I mean, I don't know the full story behind it. Obviously, people might think it's a bad look on Max, but if the offs weren't ready, then that's kind of tough then. Like, it's just a tough look all around in general. Like, it's no, like, win. It's just, like, a lose-lose scenario. But, yeah, back to spring training. Like, other than, like, other those, like, the Mets guys, like, I was on the road for a Cardinals game one time. Like, some of our minor leaguers went to go play the Cardinals at their complex. And I threw, like, three innings. And literally all three innings, the first two hitters were Dylan Carlson and Yadier Molina.
Oh,
geez. Oh, yikes.
Both those guys three times.
Oh. Tough. So.
Yadi too, even though he's on like the almost 17th, 18th hole of his career. I'm sure he, is an absolute pro up there in terms of, you're talking about these guys picking up tipped, pitches all the time. I'm sure that, as a catcher, Juan, I think you couldn't get anything by, not you in general, but couldn't get anything by him in terms of tipping pitches. Yeah. Another in-thing scenario I'd like to hear. So if your team, then this could have been high school, this could have been college, this could have been right now. If your team, if you throw a no-hitter and your team lost 1-0, what would your reaction be? Because that happened yesterday. But if you didn't know.
It depends on like where we are in the season, where it's like, if we're pushing for the playoffs, like then yeah, I'm going to be upset. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if early in the season, then it's like, and I still throw a no-hitter, like, yes, it's a cool accomplishment. Like, I did all the things I could, and it's like I did a good job of controlling the things that I could control. I mean, obviously, you'd be a little frustrated if you lose. Like, that's the competitive side as is. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like you don't want to focus on negatives. Just focus on the positives and kind of build off from there. Like, what did you do great that day? Like, okay, remember it, write it down, do what you got to do, take a mental note, and then try to bring it back out again, because that's the harder part of that.
Of doing it again when knowing maybe that could happen again. The whole mental aspect of the game is definitely the hardest part in any type of sport, but more importantly, baseball. I mean, at that at the point of where the career you're at, I think it's a lot of the mental game, especially when you're talking about coming up with these secondary pitches for strikes. I mean, if there's a game or something where you're leaving it up and you can't make an adjustment, it's really disheartening to swallow that, especially if you get burnt the hard way when someone gets a big hit, someone takes a ball four in a big spot. It's really tough to get past the mental game in baseball.
Yeah, and especially because there's so many games and stuff. Like, you gotta like bounce back like the next day or something if you're a position player.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah,
and that's a tough part too, of like, especially in the minor league season, where it's like you only pitch once a week versus these guys. We'll play Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and have off every Monday. So it's like, as a starter, you only face these guys like once a week. So if like you have a bad outing, like you got to sit on that for the rest of the week and then go back to do whatever. That was kind of the story with my last outing. Like, I couldn't locate my secondary stuff for strikes. So I got deeper into counts, and just like they hit the ball a little better. I mean, I lit up my first double-A home run. I mean, I threw a fastball away, I mean, the guys kind of went with it, like tip of the cap. Like, it was a great pitch. It was literally on the outside border. And that just goes to show, like, how good these hitters are at this level. Like, I probably would have been able to get away with that. But, like, in double A, like, I was throwing, like, back-to-back sliders, like, 2-0, like, 1-1, stuff like that. And, like, I was getting strikeouts and swings and misses. And that was kind of the difference where I wasn't able to locate my secondary stuff last outing. So that's kind of how, like, vital it is to do so.
I think I asked this question last time you were on the show, but I want to reiterate it to see what you say about it. So is there anything now, you're in double A ball with Binghamton, is there anything that you learned in your Curry Colonel days that you kind of bring to you on the diamond today?
Honestly, I feel like there's a few. There's always like have that chip on the shoulder, like be aware of the surroundings, stuff like that. Like Perdios would always preach like, hey, like between each pitch, like think in your head, like, okay, like run a scenario, like what would happen or where do you got to be? Or in between batters, stuff like that. So it becomes like second nature. Because you never know like, the littlest thing where if you're not backing up a base, like that guy could take the extra base. And if you're not covering first base and that guy gets a hit now, and then all of a sudden you're in the hole. I mean, I feel like just that point too, just like being aware of the game in general. I think that's where like a lot of it I took from college and brought it with me to the next level. But obviously there's always more you can build off of that. But I think Curry gave me a great foundation for sure.
Sense of urgency, especially with the late night menu there at that dinner hall. Oh, great stuff.
Yeah.
My last question here, unless these guys have anything, you know, obviously the ultimate prize is to get to the big show. What do you think you're going to have to continue to keep improving on to, you know, get an opportunity, whether it's with the Mets or, you know, with another ball club?
Yeah, mostly just attacking the hitters, getting ahead early in the count, throwing all my stuff for strikes. I mean, hitting is already hard as is. It's normally in the pitcher's favor. But yeah, when you fall behind in counts and you're not throwing secondary stuff for strikes, all of a sudden the hitter is able to sit on one pitch and one pitch only. And it doesn't matter how hard you throw it. I mean, we've had guys throw 102 in our bullpen and then we've had hitters literally pull 102, no problem at this level. So it goes to show it doesn't matter how hard you throw. If you're predictable, you will get hit. Prime example, that's why the Astros were so good in 2017, but that's a story.
Yes, exactly.
Get off the garbage barrel.
Shut up the Duff. Yeah. Dave, do you guys got anything else? You guys good?
Who do you look up to for inspiration?
Well, that's a good one.
Who do I look up to? I mean, for inspiration as is, I mean, I definitely like my parents. I'm an only child. They've sacrificed a lot for me. Just probably like my family in general. So just like whenever I feel like I'm down, or like just upset with a lot of stuff, like I look back and be like, okay, what do they all do? Like, it's not just in it for me. Like, yes, I can be hard on myself, but it's like I was upset with myself the other day with how my last outing went, but like everybody else was there, like, dude, like it's so crazy that like, you're there, like so proud. Like it feels so surreal to watch you throwing like a double A mound. It's just like, it kind of brings it back into perspective a little bit, trying to keep that even keel, like ride the highs, but also like know that the lows, like, this will get better.
Yeah, I just think, just personally, you know, growing up in the South Shore, there's high school kids, there's kids playing Division III. I think you're a huge inspiration for kids that, you know, don't want to just end their senior year in college, don't want to just end their senior year in high school. They want better. And I think, you know, I'm not even trying to suck up here, but I think you're a real inspiration for, you know, any pitcher, any player who's trying to get in, you know, MIA ball and, you know, minor league or, keep you know, going, try to keep it going, man. And yeah, really appreciate everything you're doing.
I appreciate it. I mean, I've always told them, like feel free to hit me up if you have questions and all that stuff. Cause like, that was the toughest thing for me trying to go through this was I never had the network to be able to like, oh, I want to go train here. Or, hey, what do you think about this? Like, it's just the development, like baseball development programs in the South Shore within like the last 5 years has grown tremendously and gotten a lot better too, which I hope that like, that continues to go in the right direction, like throughout the years. I mean, we got some kids right now that are in high school and college right now that are probably going to get drafted within the next 5 years or so. And they're going to be some big name guys. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting. Well,
and you're just proving to a point of, you know, there's a lot of people who get drafted around here, but they don't make it past single A. And the fact you went undrafted, you went Division III and you're to where you are right now. Just speaks to how much work you've put in, man. That's awesome.
I appreciate it, yeah, boys.
No,
thank you.
No problem. Last thing I wanted to bring up, it's a hot topic. Celtics in 4 or Celtics in 7?
I'm going to 5, because, I mean, we know Jimmy Butler is going to have a game where he's going to just defend Jason Tatum like a madman, and it's going to be like one of those things where somebody's just not going to step up at the right time. I mean, I still think Celtics in 5, honestly.
Five,
like,
nice,
I was watching that game on the bus, and I was so fired up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. That second, I was going nuts.
The Grant Williams.
I was trying to, like, so we took 2 buses back to Binghamton, and I didn't even realize it. I was one of, like, the only Americans on this one bus, and the rest of them were like, the Latins. And, like, oh, yeah. Like, I'm all excited. They're all looking at me, and I'm like, oh, like, and I, like, show my phone. They're like, oh.
Yeah, yeah. What the hell is that guy doing?
Jason Tatum's Dominican.
Yeah. Kind of, right?
Yeah.
Fun fact. Dave, appreciate you taking the time, and we'll be watching your journey, man. Best of luck. And you know what? If I'm in the Manchester area, well, you're playing the Fisher Cats again, man. I'll have to stop by.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't think we're playing in Manchester any the rest of this year. I mean, okay. I do go bird, and then we do have a Sea Dogs game, I think, like, Labor Day.
Ooh, Portland. They can get,
okay.
Well, last time we played there, there was a lot of spicy stuff. I don't know if you saw that brawl.
Yep, oh, I remember seeing that. Oh, okay, so that was against Brooklyn there. Okay.
It was Binghamton. Binghamton. So, I mean, that was part of the reason I think I got the call up was because one of our starting pitchers went down. So he ended up tearing his ACL. So, I mean, it's always sucks to see a guy get injured like that and be out for the year. But, I mean, just got to take the opportunity and kind of try to do the best you can with it.
Yeah, that's what Tom Brady did. So, yeah.
Of course, yeah, exactly.
Keep working. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
12 did, I'll be satisfied.
Yeah. For sure, man. For sure. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks.
Guys, have a good one.
See you. Have a good one.
2022 is here. Do you have your resolution? Here's an idea. Make your way down to Slight Edge Fitness and Performance located in Braintree, Mass. Owned and operated by Coach Craig Kelly, you can be assured you are getting the best training around. Whether looking to improve your health or gain a slight edge on your competition, this is the gym for you. Group fitness classes as well as personalized one-on-one training are both available. Make sure to visit slightedgefit.com as well as follow them on Instagram at slightedgefitness and set up a consultation today. It's time to get fit, so let it rip.
And that was Hanover native Dave Griffin. Now it's unbelievable, his story, man, from going from a Division III guy to making it all the way to AA right now. Just really, I said it at the end of the interview, just a real inspiration to all the kids around here on the South Shore, you know, trying to get to a point in their baseball career where they want to be.
Yeah, wild stuff. Straight out of Curry College.
Straight
alum
out,
now.
Straight out of Milton.
Yeah, exactly. Milton Tough.
Yeah, hashtag Milton Tough. I was going to say that. Great stuff. So we'll lead on to a more brighter spot part as, you know, we've been talking Celtics Bruins for the past couple weeks. The Celtics get the job done yesterday, Sunday, in Game 7 with a 109-81 W. Game 7 win. I called Game 7 win. I called it.
Sick.
Yeah, that's fine.
Unreal.
Star of the game, Grant Williams. Well, no, I called the beginning of the series, but that's fine.
So did half the city. You changed nothing, dude.
Yeah, Grant Williams was... the underroll catalyst of the game with 7-for-18 from 3-point line, led the team with 27 points. Jason Tatum was great in a role that, you know, we haven't really seen from too much. He's more of the top point getter. Instead, he was the facilitator, he was the rebounder, he was the playmaker. He was everything.
All over
and,
the place.
And it's great to see them move on, because that would have been really disappointing after being up by that much in Game 5 and really blowing it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, that series should have already been locked up, bagged up.
Yeah, and if we went 0-2 on Game 7s of the weekend, I think that beard would have had to go still a little bit. What do you think, Magic?
I think no, but it would have been a tough look for the city of Boston for sure.
A dark weekend indeed. A dark weekend.
It would have definitely shown that we're just not like we used to be. Yeah. We don't have it like we used to have it.
Like, I think it was then, like, Grant Williams, I mean, he tied like the record for most threes in a Game 7, which is nuts. It's going to be a great trivia question.
Is he a big three guy?
He's worked his way. So he wasn't, and now he's just becoming.
The end of that game, it just seemed like three. It was raining threes.
Giannis ran out of gas. I feel bad for him. He gave everything he had, man. He had 25 and 20 rebounds with 9 assists. He almost had a triple-double in the first quarter.
Yeah, no, he's crazy because, like, they played such good defense, and you think he's having, like, a bad game, and then, like, his stat line shows up,
and then
just, like, he's got, like, 30, 20, and fucking...
No one showed up for them either. Like, Jrue Holiday, again, played good on defense. Brook Lopez actually probably played his best game in the series. But then everyone else was just suspect, man, when it comes to Wesley Matthews. Grayson Allen was garbage the whole series. Bobby Portis didn't show up. Pat Connaughton was too busy in Arlington, whatever
loser
girl he was dating that night. He probably got to the pub later.
I was also like, and even like on our side, like, dude, I was ready to punch out the fucking TV when Derek White, like, dude, he went like 1 for 9 from 3-pointers.
During the,
like, just stop it, dude.
During the halftime, they had Stephen A. Smith on the mic. He was just like, yo, it's not your night, Derek. Just stop shooting. And the next time he shot, he nailed one. But he was 1 for 10 with 3 points.
And none of them were close.
Yeah, the first half, it was looking like we were going to have a fucking shootout.
It was up and down, but you know what? The Celtics weren't shooting well, and you're like, you know what? If they can shoot, you know, half as better as they did in the first half, they're going to have no problem taking care of
business.
That's
true.
Yeah, I mean,
That's what happened.
What was it? Like, I think, like, over the, like, series, we made, like, 70 more three-pointers than they did or some shit like
that.
It was some crazy number.
So they were 22 for 55 last night that the Celtics were from three. The Milwaukee Bucks were 4 for 33.
Yuck.
That's the difference in the game. Yeah. You're talking about 66 to 12 in points in three points.
You can't win.
No, yeah, you don't
shoot
do
it 4 for 30.
Especially when your star is just getting two. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Giannis isn't like, I mean, the Bucks, like, aren't built to, like, come back. They're built to, like, hold you down and, like, take the lead.
Like, oh, yeah. And my boy PP came to play. He knocks down some big time shots.
Good energy.
That's what I do.
He's got good energy.
That's my guy.
He does. He hits some big boards too, which is like.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean,
he's flying around,
dude. If you're not tall, you got to be quick, and that's what he is.
He's very quick. Oregon Duck, love it.
Great to see. Jaylen Brown coming in playing well. Al Horford was probably, you know, not his best game in Game 7, but probably the MVP of this series because, you know, you expected a lot out of Jason Tatum. You expected a decent amount out of Jaylen Brown. And don't get me wrong, Grant Williams stole Game 7. That was a Kelly Olynyk game for Grant Williams. But
Just shout out Showtime right now, putting in this monster fucking...
Yeah, Showtime. Yeah, this industrial fucking air conditioning.
Look at those pythons.
You might wonder what Showtime's been doing. He's putting in ACs. He's getting tatted.
I got here. It looked like he was just... in a swamp or something, just how hot it is out there. Thank God we got the AC in house right now.
I mean, this thing is a monster AC.
That thing's got to weigh 200 pounds.
Your girl's at home wishing, like, Johnny, will you put the AC in?
Yeah.
We're fucking toasting here, and AC's just doing it for the boys.
Showtime gets to skip out on Planet Fitness tonight.
For sure.
That's good. So great win for the Celtics. Moving on to play the Miami Heat. It begins Tuesday night on the road, 8:30 start. Steele, take it away. What do you think of the Eastern Conference Finals?
The Eastern Conference Finals. I like our chances. I think they have less of a pedigree than the Bucks. I do think Eric Spoelstra is like a better coach, so they're going to be a bit more prepared. But and I don't know, Jimmy Butler's scary because he's all around. He's a big time player, hits big shots. Like he's probably going to hit a buzzer beater. In like one or two of the games.
Yeah,
like,
he's a bad man. But
yeah.
Bottom line, he's a bad man.
So I don't know.
They're a very deep team. I think people are saying the winner of the Celtics and Bucks, they're going to like go to the finals. I think that's like, after thinking about it a lot, I think that's up for discussion because I think the Heat are, you know, just as deep as the Celtics. They play a lot, you know, mistake-free basketball. Like the Celtics, they play team basketball. They run 8 or 9 guys. They have... Hero and Victor Oladipo. Duncan Robinson barely plays for them right now because he can't play defense.
Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry. He won't be playing tomorrow night, but, you know, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo. Guys are going to have to come up big again. Robert Williams, who hasn't really played too much this playoffs just because he's been injured. This is going to be the series he has going to show up. Because the reason why they didn't beat this team in the bubble 2 years ago is because of the big mans.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't have Al, they didn't have Rob Williams, they didn't have Grant Williams. So now they have those guys. I matching up against Bam Adebayo because Bam Adebayo was the difference in the series when they lost the 6 in the bubble.
And our guys, we did, even though the stats are obviously like still skewed just because that's how good Giannis is, but we did like a pretty good job of stopping Giannis.
Oh, did a great job.
So like,
you can only do
fuck Bam Adebayo.
I feel like people are pretty confident going into this one.
I'm very confident. I think they're going to take care of business, but I think it's going to be harder than you think. I think that when Kyle Lowry comes back, he's usually a Celtics killer.
Yeah.
So I think that's another guy who could really own you if you make it happen. Marcus Smart, he'll probably play tomorrow night, but he had like a fractured foot or something after last night's game.
I don't think it was a fracture, but it was a sprain or something.
I'm going to go, you know, with them on the road. I got the Celtics at least stealing one on the road, taking two there. And then I got the Celtics in six, winning the sixth game at the TD Garden. I think this is Celtics' year. I think they can get it done. I think they can go to the finals and match up against any team that's going to be in the finals there. Obviously, on the other end, big shout out to what Luka Doncic and those boys did last night. I mean, by 40 points, unbelievable. Luka Doncic is the most talented guy in the playoffs, I think, no doubt.
Also, Chris Paul's an all-time loser. That guy fucking sucks.
Yeah, if you hear that Pat Beverly shit today, though, he's an asshole.
Pat Beverly's also a loser, but at least he's a hater. That's better. better. He saw his opportunity.
What did he say?
He was like, they should have benched Chris Paul. Like,
he's trash. Like, he doesn't deserve anything. He's a borderline Hall of Famer. I'm like, you are so dumb.
Loved that. That guy saw his opportunity to strike and was like, put me on First Take. But then want it in the morning.
Matt Barnes like put him down in the afternoon. I saw that. Matt Barnes was just like, yeah, this clown showed up. The only thing he didn't have was like one of those red clown noses.
Yeah, that's fine. Matt Barnes, fuck you. Like, I would just keep running with it if I was Matt.
Yeah, he was too much. But going back to the Celtics situation, I think they're sitting in a really good spot. They got past, I think, two of the most talented teams in the playoffs. Now you're playing a team that's very similar to you. We'll see how this goes, because they got by a really good defending champion. You know, I keep comparing it back to the bubble in the Toronto Raptors 2 years ago, and you thought, oh, all roads lead to the finals, and they came up short against the same team they're playing now in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think they just need to take it one game at a time like they've been doing.
At least, like if we do, like, any game we lose, like, I hope it's Jimmy Butler that kills us. Like Tyler Herro, dude, that was awful. Yeah. I do not want to watch that again.
I just can't believe they're not playing Robinson. I can't believe they're not playing Duncan Robinson. He's too good of a shooter not to play. He's literally playing, like, he's getting DNPs. He's getting played 4 minutes in game six there in the close-up.
But he is, like if he's, like, cold, like, he's useless. Like, he has no business playing. So, I don't know.
Sound like a jackass. He's on the Heat, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Hey, that's good stuff. That's good stuff.
I didn't know.
Keep it together.
Who's our big man that's permitted? That's
Rob Williams.
He's playing in the series?
He'll be playing in the series. They said no minute restrictions. He should be good to go. And they need him against, you know, a bad man like Bam Adebayo there in the five for the Heat.
Yeah, that's going to be a big battle.
I think another guy to look at, too, just, you know, looking at rosters here, I think Victor Oladipo is a real, you know, under-the-radar type of guy who used to demolish the Celtics.
Oh, yeah, he could steal you a game. Yeah. Without a doubt. He could take a game over. He could drop 30. It's still there.
These guys, I guess I'm going to get, you know, a new... seeing them for the first time, because I don't know too much about this Struss guy, Vincent, or you know what, P.J. Tucker has been great. P.J. Tucker's been on like every championship team the last like five years.
Yeah, P.J.
So I'm actually a little bit scared of that. Scared of that.
Good luck's on their side.
Yeah.
It's bad.
I'm excited to watch them. Know nothing about this Heat team.
No,
just keep hearing they're deep. They're good. They got a bunch of guys I do know. I know all the names you're naming, but like I just have not seen them play.
Well, Tatum Butler is gonna be awesome.
I love Jimmy. Like, that's I'm a big be a Jimmy
war.
Butler.
How about
guy.
Smart Butler?
That's a war too. Like,
yeah, I want some fights. They'll throw stuff at him. Thrown.
Yeah, over under on half of how many games James Naz gets to.
Got to be at least three.
How many does he stay?
The over under should be how many pitches he's gonna take at the game, and that's like at least like 79 over under.
Yeah,
over. Yeah. Hammer
the over.
Hammer.
How many smoke shows is out? Does he have enough smoke shows to line up for one new one every?
I don't know.
Game?
He said he was. I was.
Is he in love?
I doubt it. I was talking to him today. He lives right down the street from the arena. So
like he's got to be at least two games. He's got to be going to.
Yeah, I don't think he goes any. That's my take.
Really?
Upset of the century.
Why? Not a basketball guy?
Yeah, he's a loser.
If it's like a big game, like game five, game seven, he'll be there. He'll be in the building for that.
I've been trying to make the whole time, too, now that the series is over. It's just like a whole video, you know, combination of the Antetokounmpo brother and then just put the... And like on the video, like the voiceover, just that song, like cheerleader, like ooh, I found myself.
Yeah, he is just a cheerleader.
I think that would really fuck him up.
That was like, like when they threw him in at the end of Game 7, I was like, wow, that's fucking.
No, did
weird.
You see what he did too? He was it was the dribble out, like the firm handshakes, like after the series over, and he's playing like balls to the walls defense. Buddy, you're down 25 with fucking 30 seconds to go. Fucking let the guy dribble out it, and then you guys dribble out, and then that's the game. All right, buddy. Or you know what? Get back in your jumper and go cheer on some other team. You know what? I think the Heat are looking for a cheerleader. Maybe you can do that.
That'd be a great bandwagon move. Yeah. Because that is like a bandwagon pass in the Miami Heat.
It's a Drake move.
He's just like in the stands for now on, though. He's like, hey, guys, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Should be some good stars in Miami, I bet. Miami's hot in the streets. So game seven, we had everyone in the fucking crowd for us.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Pierce sitting beside Robert Kraft.
With that kind of... Fucking
Hank Prez had it all going.
Hank Prez, Team Hank on the fucking billboard. The fucking
Jumbotron. Yeah.
Unbelievable, honestly. Hank just batting 1,000 since this little fucking scandal he's going
through.
It's
great to see.
That's a stealing ass guy.
Yeah, we might have to check in with him.
I doubt he wants to talk about that, but yeah, there's plenty of big things to talk about if he wants to come back on.
Oh, yeah, great stuff. So you guys make your predictions? I said Celtics in six.
Five.
No, five. I said six. I said six.
I'm saying five.
I'll go seven.
Jimmy Butler steals one.
I'll go
one.
Seven.
They're going to close it out in Miami?
Yeah. I don't know. Everyone's saying Celtics in five, so I don't like that.
Here's a good magic conclusion question. Who do you think out of the team, the Celtics, is most likely to be hungover for a game because they rock it too hard in South Beach?
No one on this team.
And they go chill with Captain Vic.
This isn't a team that's going to be... getting in that kind of mix. If it was the Sixers, well, yeah, I bet the Sixers, Harden was out and about.
Okay, so the question is who's most likely? Doesn't mean they're going to do it. It has to be one of the guys who never plays, because, if I'm, I'm sure you don't know any of the names, and I don't either without seeing this, but I think, a guy like Sam Hauser, or like the guy Malik Fitz, who popped his shoulder out yesterday and then nailed a three, that guy could get fucked up all weekend. Doesn't even matter.
I was watching it at the end of the game, it got to that point, and I was literally, I looked at the people I was with. I was like, I don't have a single clue who any of these fucking people are.
No,
I've never seen any of these people
and
before.
And knock on wood, if they ever do, win the title, you go back and you look at, how they've made, the 1986 team. They made a documentary. They made, a 2008 team. And then the 2008 team, everyone kind of played except for Scal. And now everyone knows Scal now because he's a commentary guy and everything. So you didn't really not know anyone. Imagine if they win and then, only seven guys really talk because, the other half, didn't even play.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Legit, none of those dudes are bringing bells.
There's a guy on the team named Matt Ryan. who the fuck
no,
is that guy?
No, they're not.
From Chattanooga, 6'7" rookie. Actually, no, 25 years old. I don't know if he's a rookie or not, but that's interesting to see.
Hopefully they don't need... Maybe they need those guys. Maybe we're going to get to know them this series. I doubt it, but...
I would hold your breath on that.
Nah, I hope so, because that means we're up by a billion.
The only one who I would even, realistically think about playing, and this is only if injuries happened, is the guy Luke Kornet, and that's just because he's, 7'2". So, just say if, Rob Williams, Daniel Theis, they both go down, he might have to play.
Yeah.
That's about it.
That guy might be my pick for the most likely to get fucked up.
Yeah, 7'2".
Looking at that guy, that guy looks like he could absolutely get crushed.
As in, at the strip club?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that's my pick then.
Okay, that's your pick? Mine's Malik Fitz. I think Malik Fitz is going to get fucked up there. Probably tonight.
They're too dialed. I just don't. They're not doing that.
They don't need to be. The bench guys do not need to be dialed in.
They do.
They just need to be cheerleaders.
You know how a locker room is.
They just need to be cheerleaders.
I'd be pissed if my guys were coming in for the Eastern Conference Finals Game 1 and they were talking about the strip club. I mean, that's something
you don't talk about.
Tatum would literally be like, get out of here, Magic. You're off the team.
If Luke Kornet didn't show up, there'd be six people that noticed. no one would give a fuck, dude.
That's even what, man, I feel bad for
Matt Ryan, dude. Probably can't even get to the game half the time.
That's what I mean. These guys are gonna sit and get their early so the guys know you're in there. Oh, good to see Matt Ryan here today.
Dave Westman probably has better access getting into the post game presser than Matt Ryan does. Yeah.
If Dave Westman was on the team, I guarantee he'd be getting mangled. Shout out to Westy. He's back stateside.
Oh,
he's somewhere around these days.
Seen him at Water Club.
We'll have to get him in for a call.
Did?
Oh, he must have been reckless.
Yeah.
All right. We'll move on. Speaking of the recklessness, the Bruins unfortunately dropped They were the bad part of the game seven, dropped a 4-3 series and a 3-2 L in Raleigh Saturday night. Possibly Patrice Bergeron's last game of his career. Just instant thoughts of the game still. I'll let you lead off.
Incredibly sad, a frustrating series. It definitely, it does not look good on the Patrice Bergeron front, especially due to just like, I mean, you have to like completely overhaul the offense of that team. Like, I mean, the bottom two lines they just need everything to change.
Yeah, it's crazy because like we talk about as Patriots fans all the time, like we don't know what it is like not winning championships all the time. We don't know really as a hockey team too much what it takes to really rebuild. I mean, there's a couple of years where, you know, you were one and done like you were this year, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're rebuilding. And I think to a point here, I think Bergeron's going to call it quits. He said today in the presser that he's not going to go to any other team, which is not surprising at all.
No, not one.
But yeah, no, it's going to be a tough turnover here. Going back to the game, they had their chances, man. They had their chances.
Charlie fucking Coyle.
Yeah,
man. Put it away.
I will say it came down to
awful.
It came down to, you know, 10 penalty minutes in the first 21 minutes cost you 2 goals. Go down 2, not in the crap shoot. Got one back. And then, you know what? You made an interesting third period. I'll give them credit for that if I haven't given them credit at all. They left it all on the ice in third period.
Tried.
I realized Charlie Coyle, he should have probably scored that. But, you know, he gave yourself plenty of opportunities. I think you dominated the Hurricanes in the third period there. You were close enough. You had 20. You scored with 21 seconds left, and you made them really, you know, prairie dog the last 20 seconds to pull it out. Let's give credit where credit's due, though. The Hurricanes, I think, were the better team.
Great team. Better team at home.
I think they have a good route to getting to the cup here with, you know, they're playing the Rangers now.
I mean, that's the worst part. It's like we would have smacked the Rangers.
Yeah, and that stinks. It's tough to swallow.
And if the Rangers, yeah, like, didn't win, then, like, we would have smacked the Penguins.
Yeah, I think the winner is going to the cup is that Florida match up there, the Panthers and the Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
Now that, because the Millie... Breaking news, if you didn't know, the Maple Leafs went home again in the first round.
That was my lock of the week. Hope you followed it. Yep. Hope you followed it.
Unfortunately, Hurricanes were my lock of the week. Pat Foley's got to step his game up. I'm sorry. This laying down the law shit is going one way.
Yeah, it's a tough scene. Tough scene.
I can't remember. Did I pick the Celtics?
You picked the Celtics in game six. You're good.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan Staal was unbelievable in that series. Gave Bergeron everything he had every time they were out there. Ronto was pretty... did very good to them, especially that game seven. He had made a lot of big stops.
You know, I think defensively, there's a lot of, you know, encouraging stuff for the future in terms of McAvoy, Lindholm. You know, you got Carlo for another year or two. I even think Riley played pretty good hockey and Forbot, you know. Yeah, here and there. And then Clifton's a hit or miss. I'm just glad you got Grizzlick out of the lineup. And you know what? Jeremy Swayman played as well as he could, I think, in my opinion.
Both of the goalies were fine. I mean, there was only, I think Swayman let in, like, one that was like, buddy, save that.
Yeah. And
but everything else was,
I didn't have
whatever.
Too many complaints offensively besides.
Yeah.
The only guy who was on my shit list was Craig Smith. I just don't think he's really brought anything to the table the last half of the season. The Foligno signing ends up being a disappointment. Taylor Hall, I think played as good as he could for not really having too much help on the second line all year, besides when they mixed in Pasternak.
Yeah, and Hollis came on very strong
when they
moved up the second line.
Yeah,
he
ended up being one of the most underrated centermen, second line centermen in all of the NHL.
Because when he the first half of the year, that guy was useless.
Mm-hmm.
Like he didn't help us at all. But then they moved him up and he became amazing.
And then we're singing glass half full here, and I like that. Of the biggest bitch on the team, which is Jacob DeBrus, he ended up having a really good back half of the season.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Obviously him playing with the first line really helped him out, but yeah, it's good to see there. And then Charlie Coyle was a hit or miss. Was a hit, complete miss in game seven, but you know what, he stepped up in some big times this year, including that game three there when they were down 2-0, where they could have went down 3-0, but you know, they got that shorthanded goal there with him and DeBrusk, and then got things going. So I don't have him completely on my shit list outside of he won't come on the podcast unless we pay him.
Yeah,
so,
true.
Yeah,
I think, I don't know. I think that series, if anyone was on my shit list, it might be Carlo. I think Carlo was like a minus like 10. Mm. Like, I think he was on the ice for like, he just had a tough series. Grizzlick was hurt, which came out, and that definitely affected him a little bit. Not the... he's a little shaky too, but I think it was a dislocated shoulder he was playing with. And I mean, that's just gonna fucking throw you off. Like, yeah.
For sure.
That's a tough one to fight through.
Yeah, before we wrap it up, you know, after one round, who are you looking as your Stanley Cup favorite? Like, who what bandwagon should we hop on?
Avalanche. Like, I think the Avalanche are gonna win it all. Okay. The biggest, though, is, like, the big series happening right now, though, is definitely the Battle of Alberta.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be awesome.
Unbelievable.
Alberta?
Yeah, it's Calgary-Edmonton. Oh. Like, that's, like, the West Coast. Like, that's West. Like, that's Bruins-Canadians, but, like, Western Canada's version of it.
Gotcha.
Like, that's a huge rivalry. That's going to be awesome.
John, the Battle of Florida going on? I like it.
Johnny Hockey, Johnny Gaudreau, former BC alum, scored the game winner in Game 7 last night for Calgary to move on. I personally, Calgary is my bandwagon team now. I'm going to be rooting for them heavily. Fuck Connor McDavid.
Shout out that Stars goalie. He deserved better. That dude had like 70 saves in that
game. And then he let up. That was you could have. What do you think? Did you see that goal on? Like,
I did. I did, but I didn't see like the slow motion replay. I just saw the like.
Was it a sniper or was it kind of a tough
it looked
one.
It looked like a tough one, but I'm not. I'm not sure. I didn't see the slow motion of it.
Yes.
Who's Colorado playing?
Colorado was playing the Blues. The Blues are a pretty underrated team, but Colorado's been the best team in the entire NHL all year.
Yeah. So you got that. Fuck there. Jordan Binnington. So like, go Avs.
Yeah, I'm pretty uninterested in the Eastern Conference playoffs right now, though, I'll be honest.
Oh, 100%.
I'm more
nothing. You want nothing with that Panthers Lightning series?
No,
I'll watch a bit of that. I'll watch a bit of that. I will not watch a second of Rangers.
And fuck the Rangers, and yeah. I hate the Hurricanes just because they beat the Bruins.
Yeah,
so.
Like I won't watch a second.
I'm on the Lightning bandwagon. Obviously, I'm not even really a bandwagon. Actually, just been with
You're
them.
Tampa
all, been with them
You're
all this whole time. Was rooting for them. Still am. Glad they took care of business against Toronto.
They did make me. They like when I was down and out. On Saturday, like, seeing Maple Leaf square sadder than me, like, helped me back up a little bit. That was big.
That's honestly, unless the Bruins win the cup, that's the best thing about the NHL playoffs every single year. Just that whole Toronto, you know, everyone's just in shambles.
Yeah.
Like, you knew.
They got to get it together.
Once they were up 3-2 and they were just like, we got this, we're going the cup. Like, it's like, you guys are done. You guys are playing probably the best team of this decade. Well, no, definitely the best team of this decade. And, yeah, you guys are getting cocky, so you guys are done.
Beautiful sight. One of the best sights in all of sports, yeah. Seeing Maple Leaf Square flood out. Beautiful.
Anything else going on, guys, before we wrap up?
Great first weekend of good weather.
Actually, yeah, you brought up during the Griffin interview, the losing the no-hitter thing.
Yeah.
Alex Lau did that when we were in travel, like 15. Like, he threw a no-hitter and we lost, like 1-0.
That's tough.
I'd
cuss out everyone and just run home.
Yeah, it was a tough scene.
Wait, you threw a no-hitter and you lost?
Yeah, 1-0.
When did he, what was the, oh, was it walks?
Yeah, it must have been walks.
Walks or like whatever the fuck, I don't know.
That's horrendous.
Whatever it takes, right?
Yeah, tough.
Yeah. I'll shout out the Lights on Lang fight since.
Oh, you have to.
I got to shout that
out. Oh, yeah.
Big tilt Friday.
Big tit booty.
Big
pussy
dick
ass.
Booty daddy, whatever.
Yeah, that guy's getting shelled, dude.
Yeah.
Lights out and one.
Yeah, let's go.
Excited. Very excited.
I'd like to see him knock him out. I'd like to see him knock out.
Like a nice clean knockout, yeah. Maybe not.
I hope
that would be huge for
him. I hope too, because we got a lot of motion like at this table right now for like probably that guy, because we don't like him at all. I hope Lights Out Lang doesn't wear the motions on his sleeve and keeps it strictly business, because Lights Out Lang is so much better than this guy.
He will. I think he will.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's said everything to possibly get him.
Has this guy fought? Like, how many fights has he had?
He's 2-0.
2-0 with two pretty good knockouts, but as Lang said, he's fought heroin addicts.
Heroin addicts. Crack addicts.
Well, some of those rough and rowdy fights, you are not fighting a pristine boxer.
He definitely hasn't fought any, like, rough and rowdy notables at all. Like,
He should have had to fight Mike Live before he had to step in.
Like, Lightsole Lang's gone through the guy who's weighed 350 pounds. He's fought an NFL player. He's fought, like, ex-military guys. Who Big Dick Booty Daddy's beaten? I don't know.
The fact you have that name down is like I'm impressed. I was gonna use a couple other words, but I don't want to use that profanity on this mic here.
Well, if he loses, I'll come up with a new nickname for that. Well, no, he won't. He actually will go into oblivion.
Does it anger you that you didn't come up with that?
A little bit, yeah. It's It's better than Magic Mike, maybe, but no, it's a tool name. The guy's a tool. He's going to get tooled up. Make sure you guys are buying that fight or figuring out how to legally stream it.
Friday
night.
Folks, want to thank you for tuning in. The Hedge Better making this all possible. Big shout out to Slight Edge Fitness and Performance and Braintree, along with the law offices of Patrick J. Foley. Get a pick this week. Get it in. Get it done. Don't jinx anyone, all right? Love you, Pat.
Pick the Heat.
Pick the fucking Heat, Pat.
Game one.
Yeah. That's all, folks. We'll see you next time. Episode 79. Yep.